am on. I was running late this morning, and I am going to blame my very, very first guest in a minute. Whoa. Well, hi. This is Patsy with a Z, and welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I actually got to the microphone like a few minutes late because I am going to blame my first guest because she's done it again. Carol J. Perry is back, and I must say that this happens quite often when she comes on the program, so it's a little spooky. The weather is just awful. It was so gray and so miserable. I'm trying, but it doesn't matter because it's just an intro for Carol J. Perry, who writes the Witch City Mysteries, and she wants to get me in the mood to talk about them. And so she does this weather. Hi, Carol.
I don't know how that happened, Patsy, but it was a dark and stormy morning.
It was a dark and stormy. This has happened so many times. It's a little strange, Carol.
Yeah, well, Witch City, you know.
That's it. Anybody who writes a series, a wonderful, brilliant series called Witch City Mysteries, this is like an intro. This is your mute. You know, people have to invite you when they need rain. You're going to be invited all over the country. Come.
Oh, I could do that, couldn't I? I wouldn't even have to do a rain dance.
That's it. That's it. That's Carol J. Perry's coming and the rain follows. Whoa, it's so nice to have you on the program today. I have to remind everyone that Carol was the very first in-studio guest of mine, and can you believe that was over 5 years ago?
And it was my very first cozy mystery that you expressed an interest kindly in. My first radio interview, so we go back a ways.
Exactly, and since then, you are now, well,
I'm
what are you?
I'm working on book 11.
And what's the name of this one?
This one is called See Something.
Oh, boy. Can you believe in 5 years you've done so much?
I'm insane. I know.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I write 2 a year. I'm coming up on panic time. This one is due at the publishers on July 1st, and it isn't finished yet, but it will be. And it's just been a wonderful adventure, and I'm so enjoying it. There will be a book 12 on the same contract. And then I have another one, also from Kensington, for a paranormal series, and that one will be based in Florida, not in Salem.
Wow.
So
you are.
Isn't
it wonderful that these things can just come to you? You don't know what life is going to bring you, and then it brings you something exciting like this.
I know. Who knew? I never intended to be a fiction writer. I've written nonfiction, and I was in the ad copy business, so I've known that I wanted to string words together and get paid for it.
And you're so, doing it. You're doing it.
And I'm doing it. I mean, you know, I would suggest to new writers or even old writers, we all know this, don't quit your day job. But it's a little income. It's a wonderful, you meet wonderful, interesting people. And you learn and learn and learn, and
exactly.
You go along.
Exactly. And it's like, for me, it's so much fun. Here I am doing this fantastic radio program that I'm enjoying so much. And I just want to announce for anyone who's tuning in now that at 11:45, I have a very special guest, and it is Evie Pomporus. She's the star of Bravo's Spy Game. And she's quite amazing. She's written a book called Becoming Bulletproof: Protect Yourself, Read People, Influence Situations, and Live Fearlessly. And she
I
is
love
a,
the title.
Isn't it great?
And oh, yeah.
She is a former Secret Service agent, and she was there for 9/11. So she's really a fascinating woman. And if you haven't watched Bravo's Spy Games yet, you have to watch it because it's intriguing. And I'd love to be part of it. So I'm looking forward to talking to her. She has a limited time. You know, she's got the show. She's got this and this. And I'm sure now everybody's asking her to. She's often on you know, the major networks, CNN, Fox, whatever, talking about the Secret Service. And now, of course, after what happened in Washington, I'm sure she has a lot to say about it. So she's in great demand. So I was really lucky to be able to snag her.
I'll be hanging on that everywhere. You keep telling me about great books, and I write them down in my to-be-read pile, would be up to the ceiling. But I keep buying them, Patsy.
Well, that's good because, you know, I just love it's so funny. Like this book, Becoming Bulletproof, you know, some people might say, well, you know, that's a nonfiction, but I'll tell you one thing. She narrated her own book.
Really?
She is amazing. She makes this book so exciting that it's like a thriller and quite amazing. So I'm looking forward to talking to her. But, you know, as you said, I talk to so many wonderful, wonderful people. You know, the other day I spoke to a guy who has now become one of my favorite authors, and his name is Tom Engelberger, and he wrote, he did a graphic novel called Geronimo Stilton, and it's called The Sewer Rat, Stink. And he was such a wonderful guest, and I invited him back to come in July with his wife, who's also a wonderful children's author. She wrote a book called Itty Bitty, which I just love that book. It's one of those books that you can read it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And I want to highly recommend that to you because you have grandkids. And Itty Bitty is one of the cutest books I've ever read. And she's going to be on the program with her husband. And so, you know, I get all these wonderful, wonderful guests. And like you mentioned, Valerie Trouet, who wrote the Tree book. Whoa. Fantastic.
I know. Wouldn't you know the lawnmower man would come up right next to my window?
well, you see, when I was broadcasting from my secret location, which was normally, I tried different rooms in the house, and then I found out the quietest room in the house was my kitchen with my beautiful Whirlpool Whisper dishwasher going. I mean, I didn't even, the first time I record, you know, broadcast from there, I'm sitting there, and it took me quite a while before I even heard, like, just a little thing, and I realized I'm sitting next to the dishwasher, and it's on. What a fantastic dishwasher. I just love this.
Next time I need one, I'll have to check with you.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I would bring one. I wish we had a lot of cups in here. Made coffee every. I need a coffee sponsor because I need coffee, particularly.
I know, and I keep thinking of that, of coffee sponsors. And, you know, there's one locally, and there's so many coffee shops.
Oh, Dunkin' Donuts. Where are you, Dunkin' Donuts? I live.
Yeah. Let's meet at Dunkin' Donuts and we'll discuss this.
That's it. Well, you know, now, of course, as you know, having found the joy on paper, and whether it's the joy of reading or the joy of writing, being sort of stuck in the house isn't the worst punishment in the world. But
I am loving it. I really am. I haven't minded being quarantined at all because I have a husband I adore, and he kind of stays out of my way when I'm writing, and I stay out of his way when he's doing something. And my regular writers group is now on Zoom, so I can do that without any effort. And I have plenty of time to write. It's just been very orderly and very nice to me. It hasn't changed my life a great deal, actually. I miss the restaurant dates, and I miss hugging and kissing the grandkids.
Yeah, but the rest,
meaning,
yeah, and of course for me, you know, I have like a zillion books. I am really getting overwhelmed with the number of books that publishers are sending me now because so many authors.
That's not a bad thing.
No, but you know, so many authors cannot. All of the road trips, the book signings, the book conferences.
That's
all of these
gone.
Things are gone, and it looks like for the entire summer.
Yeah.
So, you know, so they're reaching out to me, which is great. I really love it. I just wish I could expand to 5 days a week because I'm getting so many books, you know, and I'm having this, I have to have them sent back to the studio because my poor mailman.
That's not light packaging.
Yeah, either. I wasn't coming in. When I came back to the studio, there were like two big heavy bags of books for me. But you know, the local mailman doesn't appreciate it. I think.
No, I bet not.
So, it's wonderful, and I just love being able to help so many authors reach an audience now.
yes, we need more days and we need more coffee. Always. And, you know, people commented sometimes about my books that I'll get a note once in a while and say, you know, Lee and Pete drink an awful lot of coffee. They do. My hero and heroine in the city business.
Well, why don't you tell us about your characters? I want to talk a little bit. Now, you are, of course, with Kensington.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, they are a wonderful, wonderful, one of the smaller publishing companies, but I'm big in heart and big in reach.
Yes.
Because they get you on that NCAP and Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
Which is quite an amazing feat. You know,
publicity has been just amazing. I've had the back cover of Ellery Queen magazine, and I've had Woman's World and some of the puzzle magazines. And they do all this for me, and they're just wonderful and lovely people, and they do a lot of books other than cozies. They do romance, and they do some nonfiction. They do many, many things, but they have just been a wonderful partner and so encouraging and helpful, and I know I'm lucky to be with them. And there's luck involved in getting published, because you told me we were going to talk about getting published anyway. So there are tricks to it that can be learned. And it's sometimes a matter of luck. I know that I landed my first query and my one sample chapter of the first of the Witch City Mysteries on the right desk, on the right day, at the right moment when that editor happened to need another cozy mystery. So there's some luck involved. But there are tricks that can be learned, because they won't disguise bad writing or sloppy writing or typos or any of the easy-to-avoid mistakes. But there goes the lawnmower making another pass right by the window. Can you still hear me?
Well, this is part of the joy of 2020, you know.
What a strange, strange year. We went right past the killer hornet.
Oh.
I mean, that was only a minute, you know?
Yeah, exactly. We thought that was going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
For many people, and I want to tell people, really, you know, we had the roaring 20s.
Yeah.
And for some people, this is the boring 20s. And that's because they don't have this love of reading, of writing, of getting involved in something. And I heard that many young people are sitting just looking at their telephones all day, or,
I
you know,
know,
and that's sad, because when I was young, it was easy. I mean, I was lost in books all the time. That's why
I was too. Did your mother scold you for not listening to her because you were so deep into Nancy Drew or something?
Oh, yeah. And that, yes. And the flashlight
under the covers.
Woo.
Oh, yeah. And there were many of us who did that. But, of course, there were kids who didn't like to read then, I guess. But, you know, every once in a while, I've had, when I started, my first fiction pieces were for middle grade students. Middle grade kids are delightful, and I started writing those, and I had comments occasionally from parents that said, this is the book that turned my daughter on to reading. I made her read it because you're my friend and you wrote it, and it turned her on to reading. And there'll be one book, maybe it'll be Teeny Tiny, is that what you just said?
Itty Bitty.
Itty Bitty, always close. Maybe that'll be the key for some child somewhere. And as writers for children, we touch lives. We truly do. And it's an important thing. So any of the would-be writers out there, consider that middle grade or young adult, because it's important. You do touch lives.
It is. And that's why, you know, I often talk like to veterans, and they'll, you know, some people encourage them to write stories about their life or about their what happened to them, and I'm sort of the exact opposite. I think, you know, if you've gone through trauma, sometimes it's best to write something that takes you away from the trauma. And writing a children's book, trying to trying to find that inner joy that was there before your event, before, you know, there are like so many young men in veterans hospitals who have lost arms, yeah. And women who have lost arms and legs and
changed the whole direction of what they had planned.
Exactly. And then if you start thinking about how you can bring joy to a child, whether it's a simple picture book, or whether it's a storybook, a middle, you know, grade or young adult book, to give that, find that joy within you and to share it.
Yeah, I think you must be right about that. Because you could reach back to a better time and a happy time, and then build on that with your imagination, taking it beyond.
Exactly. And you know, so many of them, they do have children of their own, or they're going to have children to reach into that and find that inner child, mm-hmm. and to embrace it and to write a book. And now you, of course, you enjoyed writing for children.
Yep.
And tell us when you got the idea for your Witch City Mysteries. And we should remind everyone that you were born, well, perhaps you were destined for this, because she was born, Carol J. Perry was born on Halloween Eve. And so this is right.
In Salem, Massachusetts.
In Salem, Massachusetts. And I'm waiting for them to declare a Carol J. Perry Day.
I think that would be so amazing. I did meet the mayor. I talked to the mayor the last time I was there. She is a fan, actually, of the book, and because I sent her some of the first ones, and she said, "Well, you may live in Florida now, but Salem is your forever home."
Well, exactly.
That was just sweet and lovely, and probably true. Although I don't ever intend to do Salem in the winter.
Oh gosh, no, never. So tell us about the wonderful characters. And my favorite character, of course, is, well, one of my favorite characters, I have to say, is Aunt Ibby. I just love her. So, but tell us about the whole storyline.
Well, I decided to, because I like to read cozies. I have been reading cozies since, you know, Agatha Christie, and I loved Phyllis Whitney and Helen Innes, and I just liked that style of writing. And I knew from research that the cozy mystery was, when I started writing, was what, 5 years ago, a coming thing and growing in popularity, and there were more and more authors. I met a few of them because I was am a member of Sisters in Crime and also Mystery Writers of America, so, and the genre was getting popular, so I read as many as I could to figure out what was selling. I think that's important too. If you wish to write in a certain genre, just junk out on it. Read as many as you can. And if you're writing for kids, you can read three or four of those kid books a day and get the idea. And the wonderful thing about that is some of them are so amazingly, wonderfully beautiful that you think, oh, if I could only aspire to this. And some of them are so bad that you will say, if they paid good money for this piece of you-know-what, there was room for all of us in this business. So read all you can. Emulate the good ones. See what's selling. Now, when I decided to write the mystery, I have had this thought, and it was in my head for a mystery, and I'd made notes about it for several years. It turned out to be much different than those early notes. It was going to be third person, and it wound up being first person. It was, the first book was called, in my mind, and in my early draft, Nightshades, and it turned out to be Caught Dead-Handed, that first one. And I knew that it had to be in Salem. I keep interrupting myself because the thoughts keep popping into my head, and I know you have to get to the other writer, too. I follow directions really, really carefully. And every publisher has guidelines, and you must follow them exactly. And the query letter has to be very good. I don't know that we'll have time this time, but someday I'll come and sit with you in your studio again, and we'll talk about the pieces of a query letter. I heard Barbara Powell on your show a long time ago in her theory for how to write a proper query letter. And it's wonderful, and we're going to have a whole half hour to talk about that someday. But following directions is extremely important. Every publisher has what they call guidelines for writers. They're right online, and you read them very, very carefully, and you do exactly what they say. If they say they want the first 10 pages and it ends in the middle of a sentence, don't worry about it. Send the first 10 pages. They can tell in 10 pages whether you suit their inference anyway. You can tell a lot by some of the other books that they have published. Read those so that you kind of have an idea of what that publisher wants. You don't have to have been published before in order to attract a major publisher or a middle-of-the-road publisher, but a publisher that will buy your book and pay you money for it. If you have self-published, unless you've sold an enormous amount of those books, they're not particularly interested in knowing that you have self-published a book. One of my friends who was self-published was writing an historical novel about, it was very, very exciting. It was sort of a mystery, but more edgy than the kind I write. It took place in Morocco. Well, I found out after interviewing her that she loved, although she had not had anything traditionally published, she had a great deal of love for travel and adventure. And in her, when she was a woman of a certain age, decided to join the Peace Corps, and she did. And she went to Morocco, and she's traveled many places in the world. So this was enough to intrigue an editor. So without saying I have written, you know, many, many books, or my work has been published in whatever, that alone was enough to attract attention. And I had written nonfiction pieces for magazines and newspapers. This was great experience. And I think that getting something published, even if it's in the newspaper they throw on your lawn every Wednesday, they will buy articles from local people. It might be a restaurant review. It might be a book review. It might be a visit to the dog park. But you can sell some words, and then the editor knows that you can sell, that you can write words that can be delivered on time to a publication, and that you were paid for it. That's a good enough background many times.
Because when they give you a contract, they say, they give you a deadline. The first book you wrote, you didn't have a deadline, right?
No, the first one I wrote for Kensington, they gave me a deadline because all I had given them was a query, what they asked for, a query, a synopsis, and a first chapter. Then they asked if the book was complete to send it, which it was, and I did send it. But that one, they accepted, but the next, and they gave me a contract for three books. So the second one had to be turned in 6 months from the time I turned in the first one. So all of the books have had a six-month deadline. And when I finished this one on July 1st, God willing, the next one will be due December 1st. And that will be the first book in the paranormal series, and then the book after that will be book 12 in the Wick City Mystery series. So I'm going to have to change my mind from the Salem mystery kind of thing to the Florida paranormal, which has some wonderful ghosts in it.
And I
told you a little bit about that one, and I'm dying to get at it.
Well, you know, I mean, that's one of the, in this market, in this world, in the publishing world today, they want a steady stream of books.
They want series.
Yeah, they really do, because they're easier to promote. And the lovely thing is, somebody might jump in on book 10 and say, oh, I like this book, and then go all the way back to book one, which happens,
they do it.
Which they do all the time.
Yep.
And I mean, that's for the publisher. That's like, oh, woo, that's manna from heaven, because they don't have to do too much. You know, once they get a fan of an author, it's so wonderful that they go back. My previous mailman, he started on a David Baldacci book, loved it. And I think he started around book 9 or something like that. And then he went back. And then he started all, you know, from the beginning and read every book thereafter. And by the time he retired, I don't know what he's doing. Because he said to me, I could get a PhD in David Baldacci.
There you go.
Because not only did he read every book, he listened because, you know, he's driving around. So the Audible book is so much fun to listen to. And so he was testing me. He'd say, like, do you remember? And do you remember? And I said, yeah, I have a good memory, but listen, I don't remember which. He's like, it was like Jeopardy with him. Every time he saw me,
he'd have a Baldacci question.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
He was a keynote speaker at one of the Florida Mystery Writers of America meetings.
Yeah.
And he was just as charming and giving and kind to writers and tells funny stories about himself. He's just what you think he is.
Yeah, he is yeah. Wonderful. He's just wonderful. Yeah. And now with you, of course, too. So you have your character. Let's quickly do your characters and then talk about also the Audible version. So you have Lee Barrett. Let's talk about
Lee Barrett.
How'd she get involved in all this?
I know.
She finds a lot of bodies.
She's kind of nosy. So
yeah.
Lee Barrett is a young widow. Her husband, Johnny Barrett, was a NASCAR driver who unfortunately died in an accident. She came back to Salem, and she moved in with her aunt Ibby in the old family home on Winter Street in Salem, at where she was raised, actually, because her parents had died in a plane crash when she was 4. And Aunt Ibby, a single lady, her mother's sister took her in and raised her. So she has come home to Salem. Now, she's experienced in the TV business because in Florida, she'd been a weather girl, and she had been a home shopping channel host, and she had done commercials. That was the business she was in. So she went to apply for a job. She had sent a request for an interview at WICH-TV, a small station in Salem, which there isn't really one, but shouldn't there be one named WICH?
It should be.
And when she goes to get the job, she finds that, and the receptionist, who's named Rhonda, says, no, the job's already been taken. He hired some guy. So Lego is upset. She doesn't want anyone to see her cry. She leaves the building. She goes out. She's standing by Salem Harbor, which is where the station is, right backed up to it. And, of course, she finds a body floating in the harbor, which is my beginning of my book. And that's the first body that Lee encounters in her 12-book journey, but it definitely won't be the last one. And Aunt Ibby, it turns out, is a very hip, slim, red-haired, 60-something techie. She has all the new toys. She's much more techie than I am. And she's also a research librarian. This is based on my second mother-in-law. My marriages all didn't work out as well as this one has, going on 40 years, but I loved all my mothers-in-law, strangely. And my second mother-in-law was a red-haired research librarian. So that she was kind of part of how Aunt Ibby came to be. And Aunt Ibby is a great help to us amateur sleuth, because she looks stuff up. She knows things. And she says she's a professional snoop.
And I can't wait until we see this as a television series on the Hallmark Channel, because I'm waiting to see what actress is going to take Aunt Ibby's part.
And you have put such good intention into the atmosphere for Carol to have this book series on television. that I am a believer.
You have to. It's going to happen. I have a feeling it's going to happen. And I think the key might be to find an actress who, let's say, is of advanced age, who would want this part. Because Aunt Ibby is the kind of part in a television series that she steals all the scenes. I love actresses like that who can come in. It's like in Castle. Remember the series Castle? His mom always came in. It didn't matter what the rest of the program was about. Her particular sections, when she'd be on the air, she stole the scene. And there must be an actress out there who needs this part of Aunt Ibby. It will be an Emmy Award-winning part. And we have to get it to the right people. You know, Hollywood's going to pick up after this. And I will tell you one thing. There are so many horrible, horrible things on streaming video and television that are so boring. And I when I'm watching, I think, oh, if only somebody would do the Witch City Mystery Series. Because I first of all, of course, Lee Barrett's a great part.
How about River North? River North has a lot of fans, too.
Exactly. River North is great. And then, of course, we need a cat in there. Let's talk a little bit about Orion.
Orion. The first day, now this woman, this body that she's found in the harbor was the radio's call-in psychic who is floating in the harbor, not of her own volition. But she had a cat that appeared with her on TV. Nobody seems to know where this cat came from, but he was in, the dead body psychic was named Ariel Constellation, which is just a lovely name. My daughter thought it up for us. I call it psychic. Well, now that job is available because the psychic is dead. And as Lee is leaving the morning after she has found the body and already offended the chief of police and met the young detective who is kind of taken with her, she trips over a cat and scrapes her knee and rips her stocking. And so the cat had been called Orion, as in the constellation, by the psychic. But Lee mishears it as Orion.
Well, being Massachusetts.
The Irish way, apostrophe Ryan, and so Orion is born. Now, when I first submitted the idea for these books to Kensington, I said I intended to be a series. So, of course, they said, "Well, can you give us some outlines of the second and third book?" No, I've never even thought about them yet. So I had to hurry up and think up that. But Orion, my friend Cheryl Holland says, you can tell a cozy mystery because there'll probably be a pun in the title and an animal on the cover.
That's it.
And that's true. And Orion, my imaginary cat, who is now very real to me, he writes my newsletters, it says that the bigger the cat on the cover, the better the book.
Well, you know, Carol, this time has gone so quickly, and I think it's still, it's still stormy out there. I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I want everyone to have a look at Carol J. Perry's books. They're available. And isn't it wonderful that you're on the end cap at Barnes Noble?
Well, if they'd ever open the darn store again.
We hope they will open it up. Yep. And the most recent book was Murder Take Two, right?
Yep. Murder Take Two will be out September 1st.
September 1st.
And the one before that.
Final
was,
Exam.
Yep.
Final Exam is great. So everybody, and also, what's your website?
www.caroljperry.com.
Okay, well, Carol, thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper. It's, as always, it's a joy to talk to you.
Thank you, Patsy. Love talking to you.
Okay.
And hi to Big Ed.
Okay, all right. Okay, bye-bye now. And
bye-bye.
We're going to do, I want to play a book buzz for Glenn Erickson. Well, it's a promo for Glenn Erickson's wonderful book, Android Love, and people might be interested in this right now. Okay, and then we'll go to commercial.
From the pen of local storyteller Glenn Erickson comes a tale of romance and suspense. A truck driver encounters a beautiful woman fleeing in the night. Why is she running? Who is she running from? When Richard stops to help her, he has no idea his life is about to change. His quiet life as a widower is turned upside down when he discovers that Marie, as she calls herself, is really an advanced android, one who not only has escaped those who created her, but who has become self-aware. She wants to be free. She wants to live. Can Richard protect her from the corporation that claims her as their property to do what they want with her? Will Marie be able to find justice before she's captured by a bounty hunter? Android love is a new type of love story. Does an android have the right to feel love? To form an unshakable bond with a human that defies logic? The story of Richard and Marie will touch your heart and get you thinking about the world of the future. Are we prepared? Android Love, written by author and storyteller Glenn Erickson, is available on Amazon KDP.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I am just waiting for Evie Pampouris to call in. She is so amazing, and her book is fascinating, and I'm really thrilled that she's going to be joining me because she is in high demand right now. She is a former Secret Service agent, and she's written a wonderful book called Becoming Bulletproof, but she's got limited time because I know she is in demand from radio stations and television stations all over the world, actually, to talk about both her book and about what's going on with the Secret Service in Washington, D.C., and I know she'll have a lot to talk about. So I'm going to keep her on as long as I can, right up until the end of the show. So I'll keep her just until the last few minutes, simply because I want to give her as much time to tell about her amazing story and to share with you, really what it means to learn how to protect yourself and how to read people and influence situations. And I think we're all in a crazy time now where, gosh, everything's happening at once. It's going from one thing to another. And she's also been involved in contagious diseases, and so she has so many amazing things in her life that she's done, and it's going to be a real honor to get to talk to her. So I'm just waiting for them to call in. She's in New York City, I think, and we have to wait for that. But meanwhile, I want to just remind everyone that go to my website radio-joyonpaper.com, and I've put up there some, I've been doing it as fast as I can. I'm getting interviews up. The one I did the other day, I think, with Tom Engelberger, Geronimo Stilton, the graphic novel, The Sewer Rats Stink. This is a really fun book, and Tom is a great, great person. I just was so thrilled in having the opportunity to talk to him, and this is a wonderful book for kids. And while you're at it, have a look at his wife's books, and her name is Cece Bell, C-E-C-E, Cece Bell, and she is also a wonderful children's author and really writes delightful books that you will be sure to find one appropriate for the different age, whatever age children you have. She's wonderful. And they are both going to come on in July so that we can talk more about things to do. And one of the wonderful things is that Tom is... he has so many ideas and so many things, and a wonderful website with ideas on what things children can do during the summer and all sorts of events. And so I hope that you'll check that out. And that's at my webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com. And also there's a form there. If you have a question, if I can help you with anything, please let me know, and I will be happy to answer your questions. If you have a question about query letters, about anything, let me know, and I will get back to you. Also, if you have a question about where different agents or agencies that you might want to submit, I will be happy to tell you what I know about certain agencies and what they're looking for, and maybe I can shift you in the right direction. And that would be just, you know, something that I really want to do. And of course, if you have a particular favorite author, I always love to hear about a favorite author. I remember that Mickey Larson, of the wife of Bill Larson, who comes in here once a month, or normally comes in here once a month, to offer information about intellectual property. She one day said to me, my favorite author is Elizabeth George. And so next day I picked up the phone and called Elizabeth George. And next, Elizabeth George was on the program. And of course, she's the author of the wonderful book, Henry VIII, 896 pages, I think, that she handwrote. Can you imagine? She handwrote the entire book. And she still has a copy, which I told her is very valuable, because most authors don't have a copy of their handwritten book because they don't write them by hand very often. Douglas Brunt is another author who writes his books. He writes them on a yellow legal pad. And so it's nice. Historians will appreciate them, because we don't, you know, when you're just using a computer, you don't have this constant sort of record of how the book looked at the very, very beginning, and then, what the final outcome was. Are we trying to get Evie on the phone, Big Ed? We're trying. We haven't gotten her yet. Who knows? Things are changing rapidly. I'm sure things are changing rapidly in her life, because, as I said, as a former Secret Service agent, and you know, we heard about the problems. I'm sure that she's upset. It's not easy for the job that they do. They work so hard, and they are trained so well, but you know, it becomes very personal when people that they might know, that people they might have trained or they might have worked with, are injured. And so I know that she's really tied up. I hope that we get her on the line today. Everything was just moving along very nicely, we'll see that if we get her today. If not, I will get her another time. But I hope that Big Ed's in the control room, and he is trying to get her. And so meanwhile, I want to talk also about. You know, Carol mentioned Barbara Poel, who is a literary agent in New York City, who is with the Irene Goodman agency. And Barbara, who, you know, reads so many query letters, and she gets so many, she gets like, I think she gets something like 50, 60 a week. So she always has a good eye for a book. And so if you want to have a look at Irene Goodman Agency in New York City, they have their all the links to their different agents. And Barbara Poyle is a really a fascinating young woman. She was a comedian, so she's a really great guest. But she always talks about what you're looking for in a query letter, which is essentially the hook, the book, the cook, and three things that you have to cover. You have to first, you know, hook the literary agent, because literary agents get 50, 60, even 100 submissions a week. And that first paragraph has to catch them. Then you talk about the book, you know, all within one paragraph or so, because it has to be kept to exactly the number of words that they're asking for. And then, of course, the final thing is the cook, a little bit about yourself. And as Carol said, don't concentrate, if you've self-published, don't concentrate on that. Concentrate on other things if you can. But definitely, it's something, an area where you say why you should be read, why people would want to read you. Of course, having a large Facebook following, or already having built yourself what they call nowadays the platform is important. You would put that there in the query letter. Are we ready, Ed? No response. Okay, well, you know, it's good. Some days we have these things and some days we don't, and we will find out what's going on with them. But anyway, I had the confirmation this morning at 7 o'clock, and so I'm surprised. But you never know. I just realized I said from New York. My goodness, what? I thought Ed was saying something to me. I don't know. Maybe I don't know what's happening in New York. I didn't turn on the television. I just realized I've been so busy this morning. It was like nonstop. And then, of course, I saw the weather, and I was sort of running a little bit late. And then I came up through, I drive through the golf course here at what is the Bellevue Biltmore golf course. The hotel's not there anymore, but the beautiful golf course is there. But it's a windy road, and it's because it was storming. It was the rain was coming down, it was pouring. I had the windshield wipers going as fast as I could, and I could barely see out. And everybody, of course, is going very, very slowly. So we were just moving like at snail pace. And normally it's sort of just a nice smooth drive, because there aren't that many cars who go down that road. And so I was, that's the first time I've been like late to the studio. But it was really a slow process today. And as I said, we can thank Carol J. Perry, who does like to send us this weather every time she's on. Anyway, it was a interesting experience this morning. One of the things that has been wonderful over the past few months since I came back, was that I'm driving on this road. I love this road. It's just a nice curvy road with a few little hills. It reminds me a little bit about Northern Michigan, where we had we had roads that had nicer little bumps in them, but it's just a lovely road. And to the left, as I'm driving up, is always the golf course, which is so beautiful. And I don't know if nobody's there out there today, but I've seen a few grounds people. I haven't seen too many people playing, but every time I go by there, I think of Babe Ruth, who used to play right there on that golf course, and I think of how wonderful it was for him when he'd come down from New York in the wintertime and stay here at the gorgeous Bellevue Biltmore Hotel, which is no longer there. But you can read about it in, Monsu Brandvik wrote three books, and the fourth book is coming out based on the hotel. And she wanted to, she did a really big fight to try to keep it from being demolished. She was ready to stand in front of the bulldozers and the wrecking crew, and she did a campaign. And when that failed, she decided to preserve the memory of the Bellevue Biltmore in books. And she's written three wonderful books, and you can go to her website, because what she also did is she took photographs, thousands and thousands of photographs of the hotel. She actually snuck into areas of the hotel that were not open, or that have been boarded up, that have been sealed up. She went to the attic. She went to the basements, and a couple of basements. She went to where the laundry room was, where the maids used to do the ironing. She went all over that hotel and took photographs. And so she has this wonderful, wonderful collection, which she is sharing with everybody online. And it's Bon Sue Brunvik. And all you have to do is go there, and you can have, it's almost magical to be able to click through one photo after another and imagine what the hotel was like. I was lucky enough, it was still in existence when we first arrived in Florida. I used to love to go to the everybody's making noise here. I used to love to sit, my boys who actually took golf lessons at the golf club there, and I would sit at the hotel on the balcony outside. It was wonderful. The porch, they had rocking chairs, and it was so beautiful, and I so loved it. And of course, inside in the hotel, they still serve tea, a proper tea. It was wonderful. And it's heartbreaking. Every time on the one hand, I drive up that road and I love the golf course, but then I think about how they tore it down. It was such a beautiful building. And I haven't gotten over it. I went one time, I went through the, where they're building townhouses and things. And I just, I don't know. I feel like the architect didn't have joy on paper when they were doing it, because it's not as, certainly it didn't capture the beauty of the Bellevue Biltmore, which I love that hotel. So, but anyway, these things come and they go. And so that's why you have to appreciate things while they're here. And we are very lucky here in Florida. We have so many wonderful places to visit. But remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping and working for Carol J. Perry, because she has a wonderful series, Witch City Mysteries. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. Everybody needs somebody to say something nice, because this is pandemic thing is getting really boring. Anyway, I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. We tried to get Evie on, and we didn't, but we will try again. I hear my phone. I have a feeling they're sending me an urgent message. Anyway, bye-bye now. Take care. And Ed saluted me, and I am saluting him. Bye-bye now.